Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
One British-Australian superiority when it comes into play, it's you used to pronounce it aluminum, but it's supposed to be pronounced aluminium. I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
I've always said aluminum. But...
I've noticed that I've said aluminium every time. It's just interesting. Oh. I've looked it up and it's either or. My name is Jet, also known as T Pangolin. Joining us on the cast today are...
Jan Boruta.
Rob R8XFT.
Alpha Shard.
I'm going to take a look at the Barbarian Invasion civs that came out just before Christmas. These civs were by JFD, Sukratat, More Civs and Tarsistium. As an ancient world modder, I have to say I was ecstatic when these four came out.
All these different modders who usually don't collaborate collaborated to do this one particular theme and release it on the one day. So you thought, oh, cool, JFD has come out with a new civ. But then that was followed by more civs. That was followed by Regal, and then that was followed by Tarsisio. And you're just like, this day is just going to be amazing. I think that basically influenced my style of play, because the first thing that I did was install all of them and play on the Europe map, from the Scrambled Continents map, with the Gauls, Germans, Thrace, Iberians, Carthage, Rome. It was fantastic. Probably one of my favorite modding experiences of last year.
Just imagine for me, as you know, creating Anno Domini, all of a sudden, four things that I can use, not just one, but four different civs.
Not even you can play as, you can utilize.
Put in the mod, can just look at it, and there's so many different new ideas within there, I think, as well, which was just nice.
Each one of these four civs have varying levels of conceptual greatness. Not greatness, but there's...
I would say conceptual integrity.
That's an interesting word. Can we copyright that?
Sure.
That's like a buzzword now.
Gauls, Sukratat and More Civs. We had the Germans by JFD. We had Thrace by Virigal and More Civs. And also the Iberians by Tarsisio CM. So what we're going to do then is go through each of these and actually just take a little bit more of a sort of a critical look at them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at the good things and things maybe they may have included.
Yeah. Their unique ability is master metal workers, and they can discover metal-based luxury resources whenever a mine is constructed. This is a completely random effect, because you can build a mine on any hill. As soon as you do that, you may discover whatever the largest quantity of a particular metal resources is found on that map. So, for example, if I build a mine, and the most metal-abundant resource on the map happens to be copper, I will receive copper, and I won't receive gold or anything. So that's an interesting point to consider. Silver, gold, copper, iron, and aluminium provide plus one culture when improved.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to get the copper and silver and gold as an extra luxury, and that's sometimes quite useful early on.
I really liked that ability. I think it was Sukratak who came up with it. I just gave a general theme in the beginning of designing the Gauls, because I was enthralled by the whole theme of Gauls being superior in metalworking in the beginning to the Romans, for example, who quite frankly copied the Gaul designs.
Yep.
This came around as a random thing, that the chance of finding those luxury resources diminishes with every city you build those mines around, and with every consecutive node of this luxury resource. So you might find three sources of one metal around your capital, only one around your second city, and none later.
So that's an interesting thing that I consider the actual coding behind it, and that kind of gives people more information behind it, because I'm under the impression that when you build a mine around your city, one of those will be a certain luxury resource. The way that it would be coded is build a mine and then that will turn into a luxury resource. But the wording, it essentially implies that you spawn with the metal around you and you uncover them.
No, there is a chance that the mine will turn into this luxury resource.
Okay. So how does it work? When I build a mine, does the code then spawn that in based on a number generator, or is it automatically placed near your capital and you uncover them with each mine that you build?
All I know and all I can say about it is that there's a chance that this resource will spawn there. And I don't really know if it will supersede any resource that is present there, but I think it shouldn't.
I think it'll work pretty much like one of the events that they've got on somewhere. I don't know which civ it is, or whether or not it's a generic one where you get automatically some iron or something as one of the events.
Oh, like it spawns nearby. Okay, yeah, I know the Suma has a decision where it spawns a source of wheat nearby.
Yeah, so I think it's like that. Rather than the event triggering it, the actual building of the mine triggering that.
It's interesting to see how it's done. The general theme, the metal theme, I love it. I really like civilizations with a certain theme, not in how you should play, but thematics and the flavor.
Yeah, because there were no civs apart from Russia that had anything to do with metals and strategic resources. So I think it covers a very fine niche of gameplay. Even though this unique ability is kind of luck-based, and the plus one culture on metal resources is just a small bonus.
Yeah.
But it's good.
I can definitely say that just because of the unique ability alone, it was probably the civ that I really wanted to play the first, with a Pantheon getting plus one faith and plus one culture from silver and gold. That stacks nicely as well.
That's a good idea. I think some Pantheons in Barathor's, more Pantheons mod and more resources would also make a very, very fine synergies with that, because he has a Pantheon that adds more production on iron, for example, or on metal luxury resources alone.
Speaking of that mod, it's also a good idea if you have a strategic, you can put a manufactory on top of it. So not only will it connect it, but using that Pantheon, you'll also get an increased amount of production from that one tile. Stack it with freedom and also stack it with the World Congress. So you get culture, whatever the Pantheon gives you, the plus four from the original, whatever it gives you. So you end up having, you know, a tile with just like an insane amount of just yields. It's great.
I do like that. It does seem synergistic with the Metalsmith ability. Adding a little extra culture is good, and it's not overpowering, unbalanced.
It's just compelling enough to give it more than one playthrough.
It definitely has a certain amount of replayability.
I thought that the Oath Sworn's a nice idea as well, actually giving a bonus when it gets killed.
It's a swordsman replacement, and it's stronger initially. It will provide all surrounding units a temporary combat boost, which increases with the level when it is killed in combat. So if you have a particularly high level Oathsworn, when it dies, you'll get a combat boost for the units around it. And only the Gauls may build it, or unless the city-state gives it to you if the Gauls aren't in the game.
Is there any other unique unit that actually does anything like that, that gives a bonus when it's killed? I can't recall any other.
Yeah, I didn't come across any like that earlier.
In terms of original concepts, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's very, very original, but in terms of actual usefulness, I'm not sure, because I tend to like my units not to die, and having that as the only kind of unique attribute kind of downplays it.
I guess you could kind of roleplay it, like one of your units just goes all crazy, berserk, charges at the city, sacrifices itself, so all your other units get all riled up, and like, let's get him!
it's fantastic.
I think conceptually for the goals it's excellent.
Yes.
There's a minor criticism. It depends on how you actually play the game.
Yeah.
As somebody that doesn't really use a lot of units together, it's got limited use for me.
Yep.
But people that go in and attack a city with maybe four or five units, maybe more, I can see the use in that.
Civ 4 with the unit stacking, and you could have like 40 units sitting there, and one power charge them all up would be awesome. Here you have maybe like 8 units surrounding the city.
If you're going to capture another city, if you're going to demolish another unit's army, it's well known that melee units are the way to do that anymore. Melee units are really only used for meat shields these nowadays. And if you're going to go after a city, you're going to go after it with a bunch of ranged units strategically placed and with only just a handful of melee units, so or like a horseman, so they can capture the city. I just wish it had some sort of other trait to it. Maybe it could be like a minor trait, but something else to see that it's useful when it's alive. But conceptual, I think it's a fantastic idea.
The main concept behind it is that when you lose this unit and it's high level, you get a compensation for losing a high level unit. Surrounded units are just what Scott said, that they enter this vengeful wrath. They want to avenge their fallen comrades. The initial idea was that this unit would be a super elite tank that would have the ability, like an action, like of a general, to sound the Karnix. Like this Gallic or Celtic war horn that would rile up the surrounding units, but it wouldn't die. It would be a one-time mission to do that, like conversion in a missionary. But I think this dying kind of thing is better because it balances the unit out.
The other unique attribute is the Metalsmith. Now, this is the unique building replacing the mint, and every silver and gold worked by the city produces plus 2 gold, which is kind of like the mint already. Also, get plus 2% gold for every mined work by the city. So that is absolutely fantastic, getting extra gold for those production tiles that you already use.
Yeah, and the requirements to build the metalsmith are not actually only silver and gold, but also copper, iron, aluminum. So you can get the money from your mines even if you don't have the regular gold and silver around needed for the regular mint. So you can swim in cash.
Because a lot of the things that happens when you try to go full wonder production, you don't get many benefits out of that. At least with the ghouls, if you're trying to rush a wonder, you're also going to get extra benefits because although your food's going to be declining because you're working tiles that won't improve your food, you're still going to get lots of gold so you can buy perhaps buildings like granaries to make up for that thing that you lost.
So as a conclusion, despite having a very strong like mining and metal only focus, it's a very versatile sieve, capable of peace and war.
Well, I think Metalsmiths does work well with Master Metalworks. That seems like synergistic to me.
The Germans by JFD.
The unique ability of the Germans is Legacy of Teutoburg Forest. And the Germans begin at peace with barbarians. Say what? When war is declared, gain ownership of barbarians spawned from tribal encampments. These barbarians may disband if they do not level enough. Pay 25% less for land unit maintenance.
It's like a sitcom, you know, some episodes are going to be more high concept than others. Out of these four, Germans by JFT, then the Iberians, then Gaul, then Thrace. But in terms of Germans, I found myself worrying somewhat. It seems like an amazing ability, but it just seems if things are too high concept, they can drive you away as well. The only thing that I can say about it that I dislike, oh man, what am I going to get myself into? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you
somehow.
Know, to use the TV show analogy again, if you watch one particular episode of a high concept thing, I can kind of drive you away from that show just in general. It's just complexity was there's so many things that you have to take into account. You'd have to keep on going back to the civilopedia and say, oh, I also get that trait for doing this other thing. And I find myself, these civs like these, going back to a lot. But I definitely love high concept civs.
It would be prudent to say that this unique ability changes Bismarck also because they share the pay less for land unit maintenance.
If you look at the original design of Firaxis's Germany, it would have to change because not only was it the whole barbarian camp conversion thing, but it was also less unit maintenance. So because of that, Germany has been updated to a more Bismarck-themed era.
Yeah, the unique ability is called Blood and Iron. When you conquer a city-state, you don't get resistance, and conquered city-states provide plus one delegate to the World Congress. So with Bismarck now, and especially because he retains the Hanse building, which focuses on trade with city-states, a certain element of choice comes around, because you have to choose which city-states to conquer, for example, the ones with natural wonders, and which ones to keep and trade with them. So you have all this type of divide and conquer kind of thing.
It's divide and conquer of the mind as well. But overall, this unique ability, it's very, very high concept.
I do like to go around actually conquering the barbarians and getting the culture from that. But at the same time, it's nice to be able to expand fairly quickly because sometimes it's just those pesky barbarians that take you settler.
One question, and I didn't notice while playing it. Did you still get zone of control when it comes to the barbarians?
Yes, unfortunately you do. So you move only one tile when around barbarians.
Well, since there's so many tribal encampments, since you spawn barbarians within your own territory, the units can get constricted unless there's, you know, roads nearby. Not exactly an oversight, but it's definitely one of the balancing features because the ability by itself is very, very powerful.
Well, yes, I've run into this problem and had workers struggling with building roads, actually, because sometimes I wanted to move a road straight through a barbarian encampment that I built, and I was waiting for the barbarian to leave the camp and leave it empty.
It's almost like building a road to a city-state. They say to you, hey, can you please build a road to my territory? But at the same time, they just don't move their units out of the way. It's like, well, do you want me to build a road or not?
Well, I found myself having a bit of trouble with friendly barbarians because they sometimes get into your way where you want to move and you have to move around them. They don't always move out of your borders quickly enough, but they usually do just go to conquer and pillage other civs. I really enjoy the concept. It's a new one. I didn't see any civ at peace with the barbarians before. And the whole concept of using these barbarians to send them off and annoy other players is especially compelling. I really find it fun to use, but not really fun to be affected by the stray barbarians that are left inside your lands. And I don't really know if this zone of control thing can be worked around. I don't think it was possible for JFD to do that. So that was a problem. I ended up building a lot of tribal encampments because when they're upgraded after researching certain texts, they can provide resources like horses and iron.
Yeah, I had fun playing as the Germans, I must admit. Except maybe I just played it wrong. I would probably like to declare war on the barbarians after I'd sorted out where my cities were going.
Yes, yes.
And then maybe take the advantage of, once you've got your social policies so that you can get culture from killing barbarians, then it would be useful in that sense.
Yes, yes. I found the strategy to mix liberty with honor really fun to play with the Germans. The second part of the unique ability, when war is declared, gain ownership of barbarian spot from tribal encampments, and those are disbanded if they do not level enough. Yeah, I found myself getting a few units from barbarian encampments because I declared war rather early on, or the barbarians spawned from those encampments were already killed by some other civ that they went on to pillage, and I didn't get enough manpower from it, really.
And in your experience, did you spawn more melee units, or did you spawn like ranged units?
In the beginning, I spawned brutes, then I started getting hand axes. The way that you get those barbarians when you declare war is kind of fun, but I didn't get enough of them, probably because they were too reckless and went away. For example, I had a problem when I had to ship them all through my country, and I had a pretty big empire, and they disbanded before they could get to the front line.
What's the minimum amount of level that you need to upgrade?
I think 3 or 4.
That's hard. That's really
hard. Yeah, that's a lot.
I would at least think 2 would be the minimum.
I think it's to balance things out, because you can spam those tribal encampments.
Say my scout gets upgraded to an archer. I don't see myself getting to level 3 until the medieval era, even if I am running around trying to kill barbs, or if I haven't declared war up until that point. And even if I have, sometimes it is hard to level up, because it takes a large amount of turns.
One thing that I like to do is be a bit deceitful with some of the AI civs. So I declare war on somebody that's just too far away to declare war on. But they're pretty good at building wonders or whatever. So they stop concentrating on building wonders and they start concentrating on building their army.
Yep.
Start moving all these barb units towards them and then peaceful again. Barb units just disappear. Yeah, they've got an army, but they're not going to use it because they're concentrating again on building the next wonder, but you've already got one or two. The Slagans or the warrior replacement, that seemed okay.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
In a civ that's so high concept, you need something simple. It's kind of like I have a crazy name. Say if I were to take the last name of somebody else that I were to marry, and they have a crazy last name, I can't have two crazy first names. I have a crazy first name and a crazy last name, because then I'll just be crazy. Like if I were to, you know, marry someone, last name was Rocket, my name would turn into Jet Rocket. You can have a crazy first name and a crazy last name.
Or Jet Black.
Yeah, pretty much. Or Jet Fighter, Jet Ski, Jet Pulse, Jet Plane, Jet Lag, Jet
Propulsion.
Jet everything. I've done this my whole life. You know, more to the point, I like the straightforwardness in a sea of confusion.
Yeah, I agree. Good to have a relief from all the concepty stuff. So this unique unity, I managed to spam it pretty efficiently to take out early capitals very early on. I could replace them in 2 or 3 turns in my capital, so it was really good.
Oh yeah, I love using meat shields. If you have a unit that you can just pump out really efficiently and just use them over and over again to, you know, die, take advantage of that.
Like what you said there, it's good to use the cheap units as much as possible. Because it's one of the first units, or the first unit, that's great, because you use him very much for exploration and not be too worried about the barbarians either, because it's got the strength against the barbarian units.
It's really good for exploration. It has the Aztec syndrome, or the Polynesia syndrome. Instead of going for a scout first, or a monument, or even the Shoshone, instead of going scout, you have to go for the unique unit first, because the Aztecs, their unit replacement is a one warrior that can go through forest and jungle at double speed. And so I found myself playing as the Germans. If you pump out those warrior replacements instead of the scouts, not only will you have more of a foundation for a bigger army in the future, but you're also going to not have a weak scout unit just roaming around the place.
Yeah, it's still 1 point stronger than the scout, so you will have a bit more resilience when exploring.
Yeah, because like you say, it upgrades to the next with the long swordsman.
To top it off, just a bit more detail. The tribal encampments you build initially may be upgraded into a tribal village when you research the initial medieval text. And you can then build this tribal village on top of this tribal encampment. And depending on the technology you research, you can choose to build a village that will provide deer, horse, or iron. And those villages will spawn different kinds of units. So for example, when you have deer, you will spawn hunters, so ranged units. Yep. With horse, you will spawn horsemen, and iron, you will spawn melee units, so you can customize your army later on.
How you upgrade those tribal villages?
You go with a worker and build them on top, and it takes a long time, I think 15 turns. It is a big investment, and I don't think spamming them is a worthwhile thing to do.
Unless it synergizes with liberty for that reason a lot, because the pyramids, it's a great investment to get those workers out and start building them.
Yeah, and then the policy in Liberty that speeds up work construction speed.
Also, I haven't tried it, but it seems like it would be a good idea to spam those improvements, but also get pantheons that are related to deer, horse, and iron, because then you can, you know, surround your capital with sources of whatever, and also get the pantheon bonus from that.
That's, I think, an overall good save. I would recommend it if you want to go all war from the beginning and don't care about anything else.
Yep.
Unless you want to, like, go wide first and then declare war. That's what it goes. It's not a super overwhelming save. Its concept is really great and coherent, I think.
Mm.
A concept that kind of puts you on small rails that you have to follow to get the most of it. It's not a really bad point for me, but it sometimes might be a bit annoying or a bit constraining for other players.
See, that's my only major complaint. The art is beautiful, love the color scheme. Everything on the art side of it is fantastic. The persons around who did that, tell them I say thanks. But yeah, no, just look, overall, I think I really do like it. But like you said, the constraints are something, as me as I'm a cultural defensive player, and since I really sort of hooked into my one type, this is one of those civs that you can only really go for war. And there's no other attributes that kind of help you if you want to go other sort of victory conditions. With the Aztecs, a very sort of warmongery civ, but at the same time, it's really good for growth and culture. But when it comes to the Germans, like you said, it puts you on small rails. If you want to go war, this is the civ to do it. But if you want to have variety, I would say pick another JFD civs, because there's some great variety in other things that he's done.
I think the variety is the key thing here. It just gives you a completely different gameplay. And it's also interesting to have a civ like the Germans play against you. The AI play the Germans and have a different sort of gameplay as well.
I was in Poland on the Europe map, Flanders the Gauls, and the Germans were all the way down in Iberia, Spain, and they marched their little army, medieval era, all the way across just to declare war on me. That was just impressive by itself. Yeah. You know, there were certainly civs nearby, but they decided to go to me, only because I was winning. you have to admire their tenacity.
All right, so now we have the Thracians. Tipangolin set is quite probably the simplest out of the four here.
The one thing I'll say about the Thrace first off is that if you're playing as Thrace, you definitely want to be playing against the Germans, because their unique ability, Hand of Sabazios, units fight at better near barbarian encampments and earn golden age points from killing barbarians. So if you want to ham it up, do something really cheesy, like, say, Byzantium's belief, where you just get three religious buildings and get the religious enhancer of getting +2 tourism from religious things. If you want to do something really cheesy and then play against the Germans as Thrace, and play on Raging Barbarians for that matter as well. Because then you'll just be in a constant golden age if you're that one sort of person that likes to, not abuse, but...
use the civs to their best ability, as it was.
Yeah.
Yes. Civ is very situational. It's a very situational civ.
Since their theme is war.
Definitely. It's one of those things that, like the Germans, it's on a very sort of tight rail.
I wanted to just point the historical context that was for Thrace. As opposed to Germans being the barbarian horde, I saw the Thracians as the unifiers of their small tribes into a big Odrusian kingdom that threatened Macedon at some point. So they are kind of on the confederation kind of thing. So defeat barbarians and incorporate them to their own kind of things. Maybe they don't convert them, but they earn golden age points, so they feel better about themselves. So there's a second component to the unique ability. Upon capturing a city, all units within two tiles of the city receive bonus experience points. There's a small incentive to go on the offensive all the time. So you're still this kind of barbarian berserker that has to go all the time to war and have a self-propelling like team that you conquer a city, you get more experienced units that get better at conquering cities.
The only reason I'm saying it's the most simplest is because the unique ability by itself, conceptually, it's not very complicated, just complicated enough to make you say, huh, that's really cool. But it's the unique units that are just kind of the slagans, the unique unit that we talked about for the Germans, that sort of simplicity. Some people really like simplicity, and some people, they're not huge fans of it, but, you know, they can deal with it. I'm glad that the Peltus doesn't fall on the Vehemen line, because otherwise they'll just become a useless unit after a while. Yeah.
The units are here just to propel the unique ability, really. Because the first unit, you have the Folksman, which could be called, in another way, some people express disgust with this name because the Folksman should be Dacian, not Thracian. But I think the name, for us in the team, the name Folksman was too compelling and too fun to not use it here. So it replaces a Swordsman, +20% combat strength when attacking and -25% when defending. So this is to reflect that they had big Runefire or Fox blades that were great at cutting and charging and attacking ruthlessly everyone, but they didn't have a lot of armor, so they were susceptible to arrow fire.
So these are the guys that you don't want being meat shields if you're attacking a city. Yeah. And that's kind of the downfall, because it's a very sort of high-risk, high-reward glass cannon unit, per se. If you're going to be capturing a city, you're going to receive the extra XP, but at the same time, you don't want one of those units sieging the city, because if they do get targeted, if they are wounded, the AI likes to target wounded first, so don't bring a Folksman wounded, because they will die really quickly.
Yeah, as I see it, I would use as a elite kind of flanking force that chews up into the enemy army, while the core is made of trash units like spears and later pikes. And on attack, the Foxmen are a bit stronger than the pikes, even. The second unique unit is the Peltast. Replaces composite bowmen, gains a combat bonus when adjacent to an enemy unit, and may move after attacking. So it's a hit-and-run kind of unit.
It's something that I've noticed a lot in a lot of different custom civs, that they like to have units that move after attacking, that are hit-and-run things, because we all love them. Hit a city, move away. Hit a city, move away. Very similar to the Keshiks, very similar to the Camel Archer, very similar to the Horse Archer. I've used it twice in some of my civs, and a lot of other civs out there that have this unique thing. So it's not necessarily inspired as it is just useful. It's kind of like the opposite, complete opposite of the Oath Sworn. The Oath Sworn's one is completely inspired. It's a very good concept, but it's not very useful. Where the Peltast, it's kind of an overused concept, but it's extremely useful.
It's all about historical context again, because it's all about the Peltas being javelin men, and they need to be close to get better at shooting.
I guess that makes sense in the context of the game. My favorite thing about them, I like the simplicity, but I also like the art, and I think the art kind of drags this up a lot. The Civ by itself, I probably wouldn't use it if it weren't for the art. I'd be playing against them a lot, but I would never really use those sort of things. But that's me being subjective and me not being a warmonger when I play my games.
I'm more of a builder, so I wouldn't actually play as them. But again, I do like the art, and I like having a war civ in there to play again. The Iberian, they have the unique ability of Mediterranean influence. Gain +1 great artist point in the capital city for every incoming trade route of a different civilization. Gifted military units generated culture for you and return your control if you're at war with their new owner. Now, I don't know what gifted. I guess it means gifted.
Yeah, you have to gift them to another civ as a mercenary.
That's fine, yeah.
The second trait. It's a fantastic idea. I absolutely love it. I play as them and gift them and they give you culture in return. It's a very, very unique playstyle, and I loved it. It would be good, but unfortunately doesn't work a lot of the times, because I noticed I declared war and they didn't return. I'm sure that's going to be fixed, but I've also noticed whoever did the coding did a great job, because they work as the AI as well. The AI gifts you units as well.
Yes, yes.
It's fantastic. It's really cool. Like, wait a second, these Iberian units, and they all come with like 2 promotions or something, like a medic and bombardment or whatever, and it's great. You're just like, wow, I can use these, but then you have to be wary that if they do declare war on you, because their AI flavors are quite high, so they probably will declare war on you at some point, that they're going to become a traitor. I got all these units playing as the Gauls. Iberians declared war on me, but then they didn't go away. So once again, I love the concept, but coding-wise, I think there are some bugs that needs to be sorted out.
Well, I only played against the Iberians.
Question. Did they ever declare war on you, and did their units return?
No, I didn't play enough for them to declare war on me, but I was playing as the Germans. So yeah. I got mercenary units from Iberians, and I got barbarian units from myself to aid me in my war against someone. So it was really fun to suddenly have a really big army. But I still have to play as the Iberians. I didn't have enough time to try them out. But I really love the concept.
What happens if the military units are actually stationed in your city that you've had gifted? Was the idea that they would come out of there?
Well, when you declare war on another civ that already has units in their borders, they get thrusted out onto the outskirts. If the code did work, and the way that it would work, if they did declare war, they would just be moved right to the outskirts and become like an embarked unit or something of the sort.
I've just pictured all of a sudden the city being taken over.
Yeah. Look, units generating culture kind of vaguely reminds you of the Philippines trait, Luna's Legacies one. their unique ability, when you open borders with someone, you get a cargo ship. Yeah, that's fine. But the bigger one is you get culture for every other unit from another civ within your borders. So that encourages you to open up your borders and allow people to flock in, which is, makes you kind of feel uneasy. They allow them to explore your territory, but in return, you get a massive amount of culture. And like that, I feel that this Iberian playstyle, it encourages you to do things that you wouldn't usually do without dramatically altering your initial play.
And then they've got the great artist point. I guess that must be a later Iberian kind of trait, in a sense.
But at that point, you have to get people who want to trade with you, so you have to build up your capital enough so they want to trade with you. But you also, it's also situational, because you have to be in a place. It'll be good if you're in the middle of the map, because then people can reach your capital a lot better.
Well, but doesn't it count for
everything? It counts for everything.
Route?
It doesn't have to come to your capital, but you have to place your cities in a place where they will receive trades.
Sometimes hard to do, because the AIs don't sometimes know or want to trade with you. But really good ability. It's not unbalanced, to say the least.
Yes, definitely not. The unique building for the Iberians is the Sculptor Workshop. It increases the gold from incoming trade routes by one to you and to the trade owner for every single improved stone, marble, iron, silver, and gold in the city. The city must have at least one of the aforementioned resources. So you must have stone, marble, iron, silver, or gold nearby in order to build the Sculptor Workshop.
Does it replace the workshop or the mint or something?
It replaces the stoneworks.
I hope it doesn't have the terrain requirement of stoneworks.
No, it doesn't. So one thing to know about unique Iberian ability, it doesn't have a military unique unit, which is a trend that I'm seeing a lot now, but they let the rest of the civ make up for it. And
yes, exactly.
I really like this trend. I really like this trend where people are thinking outside of the box. Instead of saying, we have to have a unique building and one unique military unit, unique improvement, unique building, or unique improvement, or two unique buildings, or two unique non-military things, and letting the UA make up for that. Taking risks. It's great.
The lack of unique unit turns the Iberians into a wonderful builder civ. Because you are really on the defensive, you count on incoming trade routes to you, and the Oppidum, the unique improvement, grants defense bonuses and makes the units ignore terrain cost and grants combat bonuses, everything in your own territory.
Instead of having one specific unique unit, you have a unique ability that affects all of your units.
Yes.
So all of them, in effect, become unique units. You can use this, it won't obsolete, and all of your units can be a special snowflake.
Special snowflake.
The Oppidum is the unique improvement unlocked at the discovery of masonry, may only be built on hill tiles and not adjacent to another Oppidum. The Oppidum generates plus one culture and grants plus 25% defense to units on the same tile. So like a fort. Units that pass through an Oppidum ignore terrain costs, may move after attacking, and gain plus 33% flanking combat strike bonus for one turn. Iberian guerrilla warfare, here I come.
It's awesome because they're like the Casbah. It affects both incoming and outgoing units. So if you're attacking the Iberians, those are useful.
I like how history is translated into this unique improvement, because the Iberians, when they're fighting sometimes the Carthaginians and sometimes the Romans, they employed vicious guerrilla tactics for the first time, hiding in hills and attacking at night. So ignoring terrain costs here and having flanking bonuses is all about this kind of hit-and-run guerrilla tactics. The Oppidum itself is kind of a high-concept thing here. And pretty well put together, of course, with a great model by Luigi.
Yes, it's fantastic. I like the other ones when we have the Gauls, the Germans and the Thracians. They've all had one particular focus. Just on first look, with the Gauls being metals, Germans being war, Thrace also being war. But the Iberians, they're defensive in a lot of their things about getting trade to you, but they're less focused than a lot of the other civs. In that sort of case, they're more Phyraxian in design, in terms of they have different abilities and they can suit different things. Some of their traits synergize with other parts of their traits, but some of them traits are just kind of standalone things.
Yes, out of the four, I think if somebody was a brand new player coming to the civs, I think this one would probably be the one that would be more appealing.
Yeah.
Purely because they could understand totally what it's all about.
Yes, definitely. They would look at this because it says, look at the amount of different things that I can do with this. Because essentially, each one of these adds something new that hasn't pretty much been seen before, essentially.
I think the overarching thing about the Iberians is gold and culture, primarily those two things.
Yeah.
You can focus on those two things and you are safe to, I think, win with the Iberians. Because you're getting great artist points, culture, tourism, it all comes together. And then you have open borders with everyone and then the modifier from aesthetics that increases tourism from trade routes and you're focused on trade routes. So it's the least warlike safe of all this. And this is a prime contender for culture victory.
Yeah, I would say that. Gaul's coming in a close second because of all the culture that you get from mines.
Yeah. Luigi posted something he had in works for quite a while, and it's called Barbie. This is an acronym for Barbarian Immersion Enhancements. I wouldn't say it's a very simple, well-made mod, but it has simple effects.
Yeah.
It adds features to enhance barbarians in-game, both for flavor and gameplay reasons. For example, the barbarians will have their names changed depending on the era. Ancient and classical era, they will be barbarians. In medieval, they will be brigands, renaissance pirates, then rebels and terrorists in atomic and information era. A little bit of immersion, but they also come with unique promotions for every era. Mm. Barbarians get no bonuses, brigands ignore terrain costs and can withdraw, pirates may embark and have naval bonuses, the rebels may embark, can capture enemy units, and may move after pillaging, and terrorists may embark, may move after pillaging, and have increased attack against cities. There comes a bit more risk involved with barbarians. From my experience, they also have a bit higher spawn rate. So yep, there are more barbarians altogether. And in some barbarian camps, there is a chance a barbarian general...
Not a slight chance, a 95%.
Yeah, 95%. It's not a slight chance. It's a big chance. I have like 3/4 of barbarian camps. Those ones that I need out the most, the barbarian general. The barbarian generals make encampments harder to conquer because they allow the barbarians stacked on the same tile to heal every turn, 25 hit points. But they also grant more gold and more culture when captured. I was getting, for example, 150 culture for every general that I destroyed, and I had a fair amount of encampments around me, and I was just spamming composite bows and horsemen to take them down. This allowed me to get at least 2 policies in honor.
We haven't had a barbarian leader since like Civ 1 or 2.
Yeah, there wasn't one.
That's really cool that they could bring that back. I like that.
Yeah, I like it.
I think it's definitely one of the better parts of that barbarian immersions. I'm a big fan of this mod, but I think that's definitely one of my favorites. But I think it needs to be toned. It needs to be toned down a bit because the culture that you can get from it is very overwhelming. As a comparison, when you're playing as the Aztecs, you already get culture from kills, and you're also playing with the honor policy opener, getting less than 15 culture from each kill. And when you get a large amount of culture from destroying a barbarian general, it's a lot, especially for the ancient era.
I also think that the spawn chance of generals should be lowered. They are too prevalent.
Yeah.
And maybe to compensate, they could get names, something. Mm.
I think the generals should still be generals in effect, but they shouldn't have the unique look of the generals. They should be barbarian chieftains or barbarian leaders instead, because I like the great general to be a Civ-specific thing. Upgrade by era. It might be a bit much to ask for, but thematically it's a bit weird that barbarians in the ancient era get great generals way before any of the other civs do, especially seeing them with their mountedness, with the big flags and all the armor all over them. The civ's all about anachronisms, but at the same time it's kind of like, well, that's a bit unfair.
Yeah, like they could start appearing only from the classical era, not in the ancient era, which is quite big.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But I think the spawn rate of barbarians overall is, when it's increased, it's a good compensation. Makes the early game not really more challenging, but more annoying, but that's all the purpose that the barbarians have, and have always had.
One thing I've liked about barbarians, and there's not much I do like about barbarians in general, is the fact that they have their unique little units. So they have the hand axe and they have the brutes. They're not too different from what is already in the game. Well, the hand axe is probably the one that sticks out the most. That's the most unique unit. But they have the barbarian brute, and it's the exact same as the warrior, and it doesn't have any differences to it, but it just has a different look to it. It'd be interesting if maybe in a future iteration of the mod, they didn't just have those barbarian brutes, but each level in the classical, in the medieval and the renaissance and the industrial, they kind of changed to have their own unique version of the brute or the unique version of other civs, like pirate could have corsair and it can have the unique look.
The rebels in the industrial era could look like revolutionaries or the French revolutionaries, for example, like dragged down band of misfits with muskets.
And a lot of these things they already have unit art for. There are bandits out there. There are terrorist looking characters made by some people in the community already.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, I would recommend this mod because it gives a ton more flavor with very simple means.
Yes.
But it needs fixing.
It's a very simple thing. It slides into the game seamlessly.
Yes.
And it's one of those things like Socratex events and decisions. That's a more of a high concept one where it adds a new gameplay mechanic, but it seems like it's sort of always been there. This is another one that seems like it should have been there the entire time. And my games will include it.
Yeah, for me, it's become the essential mod. But as I said, it needs these small fixes to be really good.
Yeah.
It's okay now.
Maybe another idea could be if you defeat a general, units got bonus against future barbarian attack, for example.
Hmm.
That may be sort of built up a little bit to a certain cap, +5 or +10 against barbarians. In conceptually, sort of you defeated the leader and the morale has gone down amongst the rest of them. wants to find the next leader. A pop-up came up, so you could either choose a culture for killing him, or do something where the barbarians were enticed to go after another civilization, for example.
Yeah.
Probably a nice thing to include.
It could be something like, what shall we do with this general, sir? Three or four different options.
I would be interested to see how Luigi coded it. He probably coded it so that remains stagnant, because the generals, as we know, don't move out of the camps. I've tried this with in-game editor with just a regular, so it's probably a unique general already, because
of course, yes, it is.
The healing bonus. But he probably made it so they can't move whatsoever. Because I remember testing out a barbarian general ages ago with in-game editor. Instead of the barbarian general stacking with the units of the barbarians that are under his control, it's kind of roamed around the place, just doing nothing.
When I played with Barbarian Immersion, I saw on many an occasion that the Barbarian General spawned one tile outside of an encampment and marched straight in and stayed there forever. So I think it's coded to move into the closest encampment like a civilian.
So since it's already unique, I think it should have its name changed to something different, because at the moment, having it as a great general, having a barbarian version of a unit that already exists implies it does the same thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's just like it's really a tiny thing that I'm blowing into proportion that sounds...
Calling today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637 Polly. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288 Polly.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series official website at thepolycast.net. I mean, with all of these civs, I must say that there was a point where it seemed like every civ that came out was kind of game-breaking almost, and it was just a little bit of what had come out before in terms of it was too powerful or whatever, but with these, it's just about right, I think.
It's interesting you say that, because that's the general conception of what modded civs are these days. When you talk to someone who's outside the Civ Fanatics modding community, and they talk to you about mods and why they haven't got it into them, is because it's a stereotype that modded civs are ridiculously overpowered, and that's perpetuated by people who look at them, comment saying, oh, this is overpowered, and people tend to agree with them because that has a particular amount of upvotes or likes. But slowly we've been winning people back, building up an image that, yes, we can make amazingly compelling civs that aren't game-breaking. We can have unique concepts that aren't completely overpowering. It's a bittersweet sort of thing, because you like those mods, but at the same time, they're giving a negative image to the modding community, which in turn lets people play mods because they have that stereotype that, oh, I want to play a balanced game, and these just aren't balanced.
I don't know, some people might like playing an overpowered civ, or at least trying it out for themselves to see if it's overpowered or not.
Yeah, but a lot of people like to comment on things, say they're overpowered, and they just don't play it. Just to have an alternative to Alexander, he just gets... Hey, look, I want to ally this one city-state. Well, no, Greece has got 256 bloody points invested.
Well,
in
now you got Austria and Venice to compete with them.
I thought you were going to say that Alexander has got 256 city-states.
256 concubines.
It's not unreasonable.
That's really not. Like, what, Genghis Khan, father of like...
Oh my god.
I've read that about 15 million of modern population are direct descendants.
That would also mean that 50% of the modern community was...
Most likely. Like, oh man. Based on the pure sort of diversity, there's some modders from China, there's some modders from Australia, and we're all over the place. And actually, recently we have a modder from Somalia. So that's an interesting one. Bye.
See you around.
Bye.
See you guys.
Cheers.
See you out there. Happy modding. Violation the barbarian civs. That'd be a pretty good topic. Oh, I think your mic's slowly dying there, Jan.
I think that was a wrong connection. Okay, sorry, I think it's okay now.
Do you come from a Jan down under?
Yan down under.
Oh my god, if you have a child, just you have to tell them every day that you came from a yan down under.
I think Dan will prove it fun. We have to keep it in.
The Oath Sworn still retains the sound, the war horn, when it gets upgraded. Because I think I remember that happening in Marbazir's playthrough of the ghouls, which is actually quite funny, because the first time that he upgraded a unit, there was a bug, because the way upgrading works is it kills a run unit, and it replaces it with the upgraded unit. He went to upgrade an Oath Sworn into a long swordsman, and it had that war horn sound, and he stopped playing, and he was like, what the hell was that? Like, that was really loud.
Taking all the coastal cities was super easy, and domination came really early in my game. So,
and it feels wrong, but at the same time, it feels so right. It's like, I'm telling me no.
But my body!
The service tells me yes. Oh, man. It's only... Can't get it out. Sorry. Ethically, what you're doing is probably the worst thing a human can do.
But you're playing as a barbarian horde here, so why do you care?
This is true.
How many concubines? Several.
Back to the Sorgans.
Sorry. Okay. That's the thing that we said that we're going to do is going to keep it to the point, but we keep on going off these tangents, so let's at least keep that in the back of our minds and
right.
Practice what I'm preaching, because I'm definitely not.
And now in the Modcast cooking competition, the best cooked settings for the Thracians.
Yes, pretty much. Oh man.
Do we have a Gordon Ramsay here?
Much like the Keshik, the Horchas, Horch-Arsa. Well, the Horch-Arsa.
Horch-Arsa.
Wow, that's going to be on the Christmas tape. That's Christmas tape. Horch-Arsa. No, you can't pronounce it.
Well, I was going to say that the Horch-Arsa.
Yeah, go
Jesus
on.
Jesus Christ.
That's good.
Doesn't matter if I'm going carry on.
Actually, that's one of the... okay, you know what, I was going to say we can have a tangent, but then we're making it difficult for Dan already. But it's just a quick thing.
But Gideon, which we can't obviously have on the Modcast, Dan, he was...
I don't even think we're, like, including this at this point. But yeah, shout out to Eli. So, how you doing? Welcome to Shoutout Cast. Well, the thing is, like, you have to wonder how much Dan's going to edit out, because this is probably the longest conversation we've ever had.
Yes.
So, I look forward to hearing this next year.
And then you wonder how much then we have to edit it, and after that, guys, could you record some more? I only have 15 minutes of content.
Oh. Record date
January
17th, 2015. So I was assuming something we were talking, you can edit this out, Dan.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.